Hey folks, what's up and welcome to The Bosses. That's where we look out for you, giving you the best in geek news and movie reviews. I'm your host for the day, the Big Boss, and I'm here with my man, the Professor.
What's going on, brother? What's happening, everybody?
What's up? What's up?
Not much, sir. Not much. Ready to get to it.
Yeah, man. So, you know, trying to do this take two or take three at this point. I don't know what's going on.
I think we still call it take two.
So let's go ahead and dive right into the news, and we'll take a look at some of the items that came out the previous week and get you guys all caught up.
All right.
So first up, let's take a look at these box office weekend actuals. We'll do the top three. Coco ending out the weekend strong with $27.5 million. Justice League with a second place win for the weekend, $16.6 million. And rounding out at number three is Wonder with $12.1 million, man. Does anything stand out to you there, Professor?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, look, Coco's the new Pixar movie. It's supposed to be very good, so not a lot of shock that comes in at number one. You know, people taking their kids and whatnot to go see it, and people who just like Pixar movies going to check it out.
Yeah, man.
And it's been getting rave reviews. You know, I haven't seen anything that says anything bad about it so far, outside of the 20-minute Frozen short that they put in front of it without warning anybody, which they have since taken out.
Right.
You know, apparently, they got enough complaints where they're like, no, we're done. We're taking this out. Just kidding. It doesn't really surprise me. Justice League, you know, not surprising again that that's kind of fallen off again after a third week. You know, first week wasn't great. Second week wasn't great. Third week is kind of half of what it was last week. You know, you kind of expect that stuff, I think, you know, especially with superhero movies, they're going to be out and then they're going to start falling off, especially when it's, you know, as a brand new Pixar movie comes out up against it, you know, it's not going to have much hope of keeping that same, you know, momentum going forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonder's been kind of steady, I think, the last couple of weeks. It's been around the same amount, I believe. I remember the numbers we had from before. So,
yeah. And it's actually moved up, I think. I think it's actually moved up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
But again, that's another one I haven't heard a bad thing about. People seem to enjoy it. It's one of those, you know, kind of tearjerker kind of movies, I guess. Not really kind of my thing, but I understand it's supposed to be pretty good, so not surprised.
Yeah. Coco winning the number one spot, I'm not surprised about. It's Pixar. It's a family movie. Kids are going to definitely want to go check that out. And with kids, you have to bring like a whole army of your family. So that's just millions of tickets that are getting sold on a regular basis. So it being at number one is not surprising. Justice League, they're hurting. They're hurting right now. I mean, this is like what you said, third week out? This is third week out. And, you know, you normally at this point when you're dealing with blockbuster type movies, you kind of expect them to recoup funds at this point. And, you know, worldwide, I think Justice League is around the 500 million mark. And I think it was around 900 million to make.
Something like that. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, this is definitely a hit. This is definitely an L indeed. I'm not surprised at this point, but this is definitely going to be a hurt piece for DC.
I think they just hit that, you know, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on you, you know, flip that, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah.
I think they kind of hit that, you know, bit of it at this point where, you know, the Nolan verse aside, because I don't really think that necessarily counts towards the modern day because it's not those characters, not those actors anymore. Batman vs. Superman, Man of Steel, Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman, Justice League, five movies, right? I don't think I'm missing anything in there.
Yeah, no. Suicide Squad?
I did say Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Of the four before this one, they didn't. Only Wonder Woman was reviewed well. The rest of them weren't reviewed well. So
yeah,
keep putting out bad movies, people are going to stop seeing them. Look at Fox with Fantastic Four. You know, the first one was bad, second one was bad, the new one came out, and nobody went to see it because they're even, I don't care if you put new actors in, it's just going to be bad. And
yeah.
It was.
Yeah, it really was. It really was.
Awful. You know, but, you know, that's what happens. I think that's what DC has hit at this point. It's kind of that, you know, shame on you mentality at this point because Justice League is not reviewing well. I mean, some places it is, most places it's not.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to struggle from here on out. You know, I think Aquaman is next and then The Flash. Movie after that, and you know, unless you're really planning on doing that whole really taking Flashpoint to heart and rebooting the whole thing, I think their movie studio is in a lot of trouble.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. But yeah, I'm just like, at this point, I'm kind of like wondering if whether or not they're even going to go, they're going to move forward with everything else. Because it's like, yeah, you have Aquaman coming out, and then you have, is Flash still in production, or is it, yeah, no, it's still in production. Because, no, it's not even in production yet, because I think they lost their director. So they're trying to find a replacement for him, or if they haven't, they probably already have. But it's just like, I mean, things are falling apart, man. So kind of sucks. Kind of sucks to hear it go down like that, but it's like, here we are.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've lost like two or three directors on that movie, or maybe it was Aquaman that lost two, and then the Flash has lost two. You know, I think at this point it's going to be hard to get big names to direct some of these movies unless you're rolling a bank truck up to them, because unless these guys are looking at these movies going, these are terrible, I don't want to be part of this. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you're always going to have that guy who's like, you know, I don't care how bad it was, I'll make it better, I'll do something to make it better.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they're in trouble unless they really genuinely go to Flashpoint and say, we're just going to burn it down and rebuild it. You know, which sucks to have to already do that after only, but at that point, it'll be six movies.
Yeah.
You know? So, but I don't know what choice they have unless they're going to try and salvage it from here, which they could do. But it's going to be really hard because you've got a bad reputation now. You got a bad taste in people's mouths outside of the hardcore DCs who are going to like no matter what you put out, no matter what. You know, and you've got those on both sides. There's people who are going to tell you that Thor 2 and Iron Man 3 and, you know, Thor 1 and, you know, were all fantastic movies, and they weren't. You know, it's the bottom, at least in my opinion, they weren't.
Yeah.
But look, if you sit me down with everything in the DC catalog outside of Wonder Woman and say, you can watch any of these or you can watch Thor 2, what do you want to watch? I'm going to watch Thor 2.
Yeah.
because I think it's better than all the DC movies. I'm just not a fan of them the way they've been done. So
yeah,
Marvel will say it, and I'm sure, you know, the accusation will be a Marvel bias, but just telling you the truth, you know, we'll get into why we're not necessarily totally anti DC in a little bit here, but
yeah,
you know, the fact of the matter is, if I'm going to the movie, I want to enjoy it. If I don't enjoy it, I'm not going to like it, and yeah. I haven't enjoyed anything outside of Wonder Woman. So.
And that's just, I mean, that's just as a movie fan, like outside of just being a comic book fan, as a movie fan, these films are not well done at all. They're just not well done. And I don't know if it's just they're hindering the directors too much, or if they just don't, because they don't have a plan. Everybody's doing their own thing and it's not cohesive, but it's just, they got to go back to the drawing board on that. Definitely.
And you know, with the bit of news that we got coming in a little bit, that sounds like it may be solidified as of next week, even, they're going to be even in more trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get to that. We got something.
So next up, we're going to go right into it. DC Camp, the Flash Supergirl boss Andrew Kreisberg's fired after sexual harassment allegations. Not leave or anything. He is completely out of anything that has to do with the Arrowverse. He's gone.
Yeah, kind of second in command in the Arrowverse behind Greg Berlanti.
Yeah,
Kreisberg was the guy who was the other, who was, you know, number two as far as putting all this stuff together. And you know, the last thing I read were that he's been accused of inappropriate kissing and asking for massages. So, you know, Lord knows what the inappropriate kissing is. I can't imagine it's, you know, sticking his tongue down somebody's throat, but probably, you know, kisses on the neck, kisses on the shoulder, kisses on the cheek. When people don't want it, you can't be doing that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's just like, it's getting to a point now where it's just like, there's just this mass sweep of executives that are just getting axed, and it's, you know, it sucks to see everything go down like this, but it's good in the fact that it's going to set a new standard, I think, in the industry. Because it's just, it comes to a point now where I feel like, look, you know, it's great that now the people that are, you know, undergoing these harassment examples have feel the power to come up and say something now. And then you also have this environment being created where people understand, like, no, this is not going to be tolerated. It's like, I'm looking forward to a day where we can just say that people are going to work and doing their job. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you. I think that's going to be a while before we hear that kind of thing.
Yeah.
This kind of stuff,
is going to go on, because, you know, like we talked about the first time, there's a lot of different factors that go into play here. You know, I'm not trying to defend what's being done in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, some of these guys have undoubtedly hit parts in the past where they've tried these things, and the person they've tried them with has gone, okay, you know what, I'll do this with you because it's going to boost my career. Doesn't make it right, but it happens. So mm-hmm. part of what happens with these guys is they go, oh, hey, you know, if it's a man, you know, these women are willing to sleep with me just to get forward in the business. This is, you know, as awful as it is going to be to use this kind of phrasing, but this is awesome.
Right,
you know,
right.
I do is offer a job, and I can, you know, I can get laid or whatever, you know, the case may be, but, you know, that happens. That's just the honesty. And the other part of that is there are people who seek it out. You know, there are people in the industry who are willing to give themselves up just to get forward. So while it's not right, the culture turns into these guys going, oh, hey, I can do this anytime I want because these people are giving it to me. And then they hit these people who don't give it to them and then never say anything. And they go, well, you know, I tried it. They said no, but they're not going to say anything because they haven't said anything. And now all of a sudden it's coming forward. So now it's like, now these guys are kind of screwed. And while I personally will admit, I don't understand. I don't understand because it's not something that's ever going to happen to me or something that's ever happened to me as to why you wouldn't come out at the time that it happens. Obviously, people have their own reasons for that. They don't want to lose their jobs. They're afraid to come out, whatever it is. But it's good that it's coming out now to an extent. I mean, mm-hmm. there are some people who admittedly are having their careers ruined, you know, by allegations. You know what I mean? And it's like, who was it? What's the actor's name? He just got kicked off some show on Hulu or Netflix. He was on that 70s show. He was the older
brother. No, not Spacey.
He was on that 70s show. He was the older brother. I can't think of his name. I just saw the article this morning.
The guy that's on, there's a Netflix show. I think it's called The Ranch with Sam Elliott Ashton Kutcher.
Now, admittedly, I didn't read the article, but it says he's been removed from, he's been kicked off the show for allegations. Now, doesn't say, again, I didn't read the article, so I don't know how many allegations. I don't know what the allegations are, but if it's one person, this guy has now had his entire career ruined because one person said it, an allegation that may not be any proof behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so part of what gets to me, I guess, in some of this is the idea of innocent before proven guilty has gone out the window. Now, a lot of these guys, look, you've got 5, 6, 7, 12 people coming forward saying it happened. Where there's smoke, there's fire at that point. When you have right. that coming forward. But if you have one person coming forward, two people coming forward and saying, hey, they did this to me, but they've got zero proof, to immediately jump to removing that person from their job without even giving them a chance to defend themselves, that does bug me a little bit because there's always that potential of somebody trying to ruin somebody else's career by saying, you know, look, you know, it could always have been someone who tried to make an advance to try to get themselves forward. And that person went, no, I'm not doing that with you. I'm not interested in you. Now all that person's got to do, or they do it and they don't give that person the promotion they were looking for or the press they were looking for. So now that person goes, hey, wait a minute. He didn't give me what I wanted. So now I'm going to ruin his career by telling him he raped me or whatever, you know, the situation is.
Right.
So I sound like I'm defending it. I'm really not. But I'm trying to look at every angle that could be a potential possibility with something.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of gray in this type of situation. Cause I mean, you got to think about it. Like we talked about it yesterday. There's situations where people who are victimized really don't feel empowered or in a situation of enablement where they can say something. You know what I'm saying? We talked about Terry Crews, who basically was assaulted by a producer at a party, and he wanted to say something. He's thinking to him. He said in the interview, he's like, "I really want to punch this guy in the throat, but if I do that, I lose my career. I can't put food on my family's table." You know what I'm saying? These are things that actors and actresses think about when they're going up for these roles and when they're dealing with these people in the industry. So it's like you have people like that, then you have the people that act and enable this type of behavior where this is Hollywood. These are the breaks. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, this is just what
you
got
to do.
Yeah.
To get for.
Yeah. Yep. I'm trying to pay the cost to be the boss. Like, that's basically what it is. It's like, right. You know, so you have this cultural enablement of these people who are actual predators, you know what I'm saying, taking advantage of people. And it's created an environment where people feel like this is an okay thing to do because that's Hollywood. That's the industry. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you have people who are just out here just flat out accusing people without any due process. You know what I'm saying? Like, how do we reconcile that? How do we reconcile that gap in the law? You know what I'm saying? Right. So it's a lot of gray area. But I understand, like, certain with this type of situation, the fact that it's coming out and people are saying, like, no more, we're going to deal with this. We're all going to just unify and stand together and empower one another. It's like you always have the risk of people taking advantage of that unity.
Sure.
But I'm definitely glad that more often than not, there's these people, these execs, these guys that are in the industry leading that have multiple accusations. It's like at that point, it's just like, yo, like, what do you want us to do? You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, you got to get out of here because obviously more than one person is having a problem with you. You got, you know, guys like, what's his name? Weinstein?
Weinstein.
Yeah, Weinstein, who was the first one to get aired, one of the first ones to get aired, and he's been doing, like, the allegations for him are like a line leading around the block. Like, there's people that are saying he's been doing this his entire career, and because nobody, he's made him feel like this was something that he could lose his career over, he kept going. So he felt enabled in that, and there's too many cats like that. It's like there's... You have more on the side of abuse of power than you do have the guys who are like kind of just getting accused by one person and there's no due process type of deal. You know what I'm saying? But it's like the actions still have to be consistent, I think, by the studios to kind of make a point. It kind of sucks, but it's just like this is how change happens and cultures change. So now it's not going to be a situation where it's going to be like, all right, well, we're in an industry where this kind of stuff happens. Like, so, you know, you just kind of go with the flow. No, everybody knows, all right, I'm in here. I'm glad to be here. I'm trying to be professional. That's the way I need to be. You know what I'm saying? That's the kind of, like, mentality and culture that we need to, you know, impress on people, not just even in Hollywood, but in all workplaces. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is not something that just happens in Hollywood. It's just Hollywood's under the microscope right now, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird because it's a lot of gray area. So it's like, where do you say, like, okay, all right, well, we need to curb this and we need to curb that, or let's investigate that. You know what I'm saying? My hope is that all of these allegations get investigated thoroughly. But the businesses themselves, I understand them taking the stand because they're like, all right, well, we don't know. And until we know, we can't be around you. You know what I'm saying? Because at that point, they're just thinking from a business standpoint, you know, and it's branding.
Maybe the idea then is, and I don't know if this would be a proper thing to do, but maybe then the idea is to maybe not publicize this stuff immediately before you do a little bit of investigation. Because I think what happens these days, and again, I'm not saying none of these guys did this stuff. I just pulled up an article. His name is Danny Masterson. And it says there are three women who have accused him of rape. Now, I don't have a whole lot of time to read the whole thing, so I don't really know the story behind them. But, you know, maybe we need to stop throwing these stories up online as soon as it happens. Give it a week or two to do your investigation. Make sure this stuff does seem to be legit. And then you can bring it to light. Because what's happening in some of these situations is you're ruining people's lives without knowing exactly what happened or what the truth is or what the truth might be at that point.
Yeah.
And look, do some of these guys deserve to have their lives ruined? Absolutely. You know, when you've got a guy like Harvey Weinstein and all of a sudden 30 people come out almost at the same time to say he did something, clearly he's done something.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin Spacey was accused. He came out and gave what could be one of the worst apologies ever of all time by saying, I might have done it. I think I was drunk. But oh, by the way, I'm gay. Like, look, the throw in at the end, you're gay, that's fine, but you're clearly obviously announcing that to try to gain some kind of sympathy and some kind of protection from these accusations.
Right.
So, you know, he never denied it. He said, I might have done it. I don't know. That's not a really a good answer, no matter how you look at it, because you're basically saying, yeah, I did it. I'm just not going to tell you I did it.
Yeah. It's like it's tough to really say, like, oh, man, well, maybe we shouldn't release the information, because, I mean, the reality is we live in a culture where people, like, people are following the Kardashians, and they want to know everything about their lives. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is just the society that we live in. It's just, and then the other side of that argument, too, is, okay, so, yeah, even, so Harvey Weinstein has, like, you know, whoever, 30-plus, you know, accusations coming out, and then there may be somebody with just one, but that's all it takes. You know what I'm saying? Like, it may not attribute to a pattern, but it's like, yo, so what if it was just the one? What if it's just the one person that comes out? You know what I'm saying?
But I guess my point on that is, if somebody gets accused tomorrow and it's one person who says they did this, people who read that article instantly assume that that person is 100% a rapist and there's no possibility of anything else. 2 weeks down the line, another article comes out that says the woman who accused him has come forward and said she was absolutely lying, that he never did it. That article gets very little press and nobody sees it.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of people now think this guy is a rapist when he's really not.
Right, right.
And now his entire career is destroyed.
Yeah.
Because this one woman made one comment that went all the way out there, went completely viral. And nobody ever reads the second story to find out, you know, that it changed. And I don't know, obviously, who am I? I don't know how to fix that kind of thing. I don't even know if what my mind is even wrapped around this properly and making any sense in my thoughts. But I guess, I don't know. Obviously, you want the stuff to come out when it's, you know, somebody like Weinstein who's done it to so many different people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can't help always thinking about that one guy who might have one accusation that you find out's not true later down the line.
Right.
And now the rest of that poor guy's life is ruined because this person made one accusation because they were pissed off at them or something. And that guy never recovers from that kind of thing. So it's just such a weird, sometimes thin line to try to figure out. I don't know the solution. I really don't.
Yeah. It's
rough. You can beat all this stuff out as best you can, but
yeah.
Can you ever really truly weed it out 100%? I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, it's a process. And I think now we're getting to a climax within this process. That's why, you know, things are unfolding the way that they are.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, I mean, there's definitely a call. There's a clear call for a culture change here. Not even just within Hollywood, but with people as fans as well. Like,
right.
we live in a society where, like, we're so based on, like, everything's based on likes, you know what I'm saying? Likes and follows, you know what I'm saying? So what we deal with is, you know, this is bad for my brand. So if this is bad for my level of likes and my follows, then we got to cut off the disease easy. You know what I'm saying? And that's what it boils down to, is these businesses making these decisions. So it's kind of up to us to kind of wait patiently for more news to come out and, you know, try to make the right assessment and, you know, engage the right way. But these businesses are basically, I mean, and it sucks, but it's like, it's understandable. They're in the business of making money. So it's like, they need to do whatever they need to do. And if something hurts their funds, they're going to get rid of it. And that, I mean, that kind of sucks for the one guy, but.
Yeah. I can't blame him for doing that. Honestly, you got to protect your brand. It just sometimes I wonder, you know what I mean? Sometimes the stories come out and there's a lot of he said, she said to it, and it makes you wonder. Other times stuff comes out and you know it's 100% true.
Yeah.
You know, and people admit to it, so it makes it that much easier to figure out. It's that, you know, that he said, forget it. I've already rambled and kind of even lost my own points. It just, I don't know. I don't know how you fix it.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, but this is what it's about. It's about the conversation, the digging in and trying to figure it all out. So it's like, you know, as more news stories unfold, you know, we'll keep bringing it up. We'll keep making it relevant, you know?
Yeah. The happier news.
In happier news, Fox and Disney, the talks are back on.
Looks like it's going to happen. Really does.
Yeah, man. And so the article that I'm reading. All right. So here's the layout. Let's give you the layout. So Fox and Disney have been having these conversations Fox is trying to sell off some of its properties, namely 20th Century Fox, FX, FXX. I think National Geographic is on there.
Actually, I have an article up right here. Let me tell you. I'll tell you in a second. So
I think National Geographic might already be Disney.
I don't know. Nat Geo, something called Star, the company's regional sports network, movie studios, and shares of Sky and Hulu. What they're trying to keep is its news and business news divisions, their broadcast network, and Fox Sports.
Yeah, so they're looking at the media landscape and they're seeing, okay, what's in our wheelhouse and what works for us, and they're cutting off anything that's unnecessary for them, something that they're not really pulling in on, and they're focusing on what they're strongest at. And you know, news, sports, and business is what Fox is strong at right now. Yep. And everybody can kind of say that hands down. I mean, you could say what you want about Fox News, but it's everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Fox is owned by the Murdoch family. Okay. So this article that I read was from bleedingcool.com, but they originally pulled their information from the Wall Street Journal. Now the Wall Street Journal is also owned by the Murdoch family. So this information that's coming out about Fox and Disney and their talks being back on is coming from the actual source, one of the parties who are a part of this conversation. So it's not like we have to worry about this being heard secondhand from somebody. This was actually okayed by the Murdoch family to be released. So if that's what's being released, we can take that they're having these discussions and there's a possibility that this deal could be concluded by the end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have an article up from MovieWeb today that they're actually saying could be as soon as next week.
Ooh.
That this could take place. I don't think they have anything here that says why they think that.
Oh, man. And that's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
That's what I was saying. I was talking about how. So the other two companies, when we talked about it yesterday, I didn't know. I know one was Comcast. I didn't know what the other one was. Apparently, the other one was Sony. It was in the running to purchase all the stuff from Fox. But this says Disney talks have progressed more significantly. So like we said, if the deal were to go down, Nat Geo, Star, the regional sports networks, the movie studios, the shares of Sky and Hulu, all of that would go to Disney. Fox would keep its news and business divisions, broadcast network, and Fox Sports. So that's a significant deal.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a lot of money on the table.
Yeah. Well, and they actually put at the bottom what it would cost. So estimates that the Fox assets in the Disney deal would be more than $60 billion. That is a B. $60 billion is what it would cost Disney to make that happen. Now, we know the mouse has that kind of cash.
Oh, yeah.
So we know that can happen.
This year alone.
Oh, yeah.
This year alone, they have made $50 billion.
Jesus.
From all of their properties.
And Star Wars hasn't even been released yet.
Yeah. So they're about to make that 10 so that they can conclude this deal.
Pretty much. Yeah. you know, there's some other things they're saying, or, you know, could be worth noting of interest. Apparently the Fox shares went up when Disney shares came down a little bit this week. So the deal would obviously have effect on stocks if it's announced next week. You know, I don't know much about what difference that would make in the long run, but obviously it's an issue if they're going to bring it up in this article.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting. So we talked about all of the Marvel stuff that would come back, your X-Men, your Fantastic Four.
Yes, sir.
Galactus, your Silver Surfer, your Doctor Doom, all of those major characters and pieces. What I didn't even think about was the article mentions here other franchises that come to Fox's control, like, or Disney's control, like Planet of the Apes and Alien.
Oh.
Now you're bringing those things potentially over to Disney. Now, the question becomes, does Disney just shelf those because they're kind of R-rated properties, or do they do something with them? Because now, like this even says, Disney keeps their 20th Century Fox. Disney would get the 20th Century Fox studio, which they could keep on their own under the Disney umbrella, continue to make movies, which I think is probably what they would do. They would probably rename and just keep the division alive so they could do the X-Men movies, are R-rated ones if they wanted to. They could do the Deadpools. They can do, if they want to do Alien, if they want to do Planet of the Apes, giving that stuff to Disney would be amazing to see what they can do with all of that. So you know, $60 billion obviously is a whole metric ton of money.
Truckloads.
I mean, what they would get in return for those properties and being able to turn those around into something new would probably make that money back quicker than most people think, including myself.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it's obviously not going to be next year that they're going to make all that money back on this stuff, but I wouldn't hesitate to say within the next 10 to 15 years, they would make that $60 billion back pretty easily.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you think of all the things they could now add to not only their libraries for movies, but they now add to the theme parks or the new pieces they're going to build. They're building a Star Wars theme park addition at Disney World. That by itself is going to make an ungodly amount of money. Because everybody and their mother's going to want to go to Disney World to stay at the Star Wars park. It's just what's going to happen.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, with all the stuff that they have planned out for the Marvel, they've got, what, 20 movies now planned for the Marvel movies going forward, plus all the TV shows, plus all the Netflix stuff that's going to go to their streaming service.
Yep.
You know, plus this would bring all the new Fantastic Four movies in, all the X-Men movies in. It's a cash cow for them to make this deal, and they would be silly, I think silly, to not do it at this point. Yeah. So, you know, I can't wait. If this announcement gets made next week and they tell us that this is coming, I'll lose my mind.
Cause yeah.
It means I get my Marvel version of Doctor Doom.
Yes.
Literally dying for years, because Fox wouldn't know Doctor Doom if he slapped them in the face several times over, because they were so bad at creating the character. I can't wait. I can't wait. I hope this goes through as soon as possible.
Yeah, man. Because this would definitely be a strong move on Disney's part. You talking about, I mean, like, just looking at what they made this year on their properties alone, man. Like, yo, this production company is making society, like, country government-changing amount of money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They could shape and mold governments with this amount of money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, so if this deal goes through, I mean, just many fold increases to what they're bringing in yearly right now.
What's the phrase from Civil War? They could walk into a country and take it over overnight. Nobody would even know they were there.
Indeed.
Disney is basically the Winter Soldier at this point.
Yep.
So I can't wait.
I just pictured Mickey Mouse with a metal arm.
I was just, you know what's that? I was doing the exact same thing. Well, instead of a star, it's his own little shape of his own head.
Oh, man, I could see that. But I think this is a good move for Disney. I think what Disney is trying to do right now is they're trying to get a branch of their production to cater to a more mature and adult crowd. They're trying to tell more adult stories, more mature stories in the long run. And I think this would be the best move for them, because you're talking about them getting 20th Century Fox, FX, FXX. Like, these are all like much more mature content areas of media. So it just makes sense for Disney to do this. They got the family, they got the kids. They even got, you know, if you really think about it, they got the preteen with Freeform, and then even with the latest edition of Spider-Man, like, they're doing these teen movies. So now it's just time to move into the more mature crowd, man. It just makes sense. So they make this move, it's good all around.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any reason. I don't see any way they could take any kind of real loss on this. Because like you said, it gives them that opportunity to now bring the adult population in with a whole new movie studio potentially that could make all these movies. So, man, I'm kind of psyched. I can't wait.
Yeah, that's gonna be
really dope. Hoping this is true and that we see something next week.
Yeah, man. And this week, just in time for the holiday season, we get a Psych the Movie.
Come on, son. Oh, kid, I've been watching.
The ad campaigns for this movie coming out have been incredible. Like, I've been loving it.
They're brilliant.
Yeah,
brilliant. The one today, the two of them were arguing. It's going to be on the big screen. It's going to be on the little screen. I heard it both ways.
Oh man,
They're just such a funny pair together, man.
Yeah, they really are, man. I like how the show has like progressed. Like once they let Gus and Sean kind of do their thing and just be as ridiculous as possible, I think that's when the show really took off.
Once Gus stopped kind of being a straight man.
Right.
And kind of went to, they let him kind of open up his own kind of humorous side. The show just really took off in the right direction. It was just so funny.
It was great.
It's so ridiculous and so stupid, but it's just so hilarious. And these, like you say, these little vignettes, the show and leading up to the show Thursday night, have just been so stupidly funny. I laugh at every single one of them.
Yeah, man. So, definitely look for us to do a little review of that. I see us doing a nice review of that one. Yeah.
I'm with you. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, man. And to round things out, we're going to talk about the epic DC Arrowverse event, Crisis on Earth X.
That's right. We don't hate everything DC. We're about to prove that.
Oh, man. The Arrowverse is just fine art at its best.
It's just stunning how the guys who write the Arrowverse stuff get things so right, yet the guys who make probably four times as much money as they do to write the movies can't get it right. outside of Patty Jenkins,
yeah,
these guys I can't say they're awful because some of the stuff that those guys done isn't bad, but their DC stuff is just not good.
Yeah,
but the show, Berlantiverse, Arrowverse, they just do it right, man. They have the formula to do it right. And again, like everybody has said, more or less to a person who looks at this stuff. Who looks at every angle, they say the DCEU, that DC universe, needs a Kevin Feige. They need a Greg Berlanti for the movies. They need somebody who's going to look at all of these movies and say, we need more cohesion. This is what we need. You can do ABC in these movies. You can't do XYZ because that's in this movie. Anything else is on you. We just got to tie everything together. You know, Kevin Feige overlooks everything. The TV, the Netflix, and the Marvel universe, cinematic universe.
You see his name. See his name pop up on everything,
everywhere. He is the guy. The only other person whose name shows up in Marvel more than Kevin Feige is Stan Lee. So that should tell you something right then and there.
Yep.
Because if it says Marvel, it has to stay Stan Lee somewhere, or he's going to lose his mind, and you're going to lose your job. So that tells you how important Kevin Feige is to Marvel. He's everywhere. He is Stan Lee without having created the comics. That's just who that man is.
Yep.
And the word you hear when people talk about him is they love the guy, that he's just a nice guy, that he knows what he's doing. He's bright, very up to all what's going on, and he's very good as far as the input stuff goes. You know, that's the guy you want. DC does not have that.
No.
Talk all about maybe making Zack Snyder that guy, you know, and then Snyder, unfortunately, like everybody, if you're listening, probably knows, had to step away from the DC universe, although there's now some controversy saying that he didn't step away, that he was forced out.
Oh, wow.
I've seen that in a couple places, but to me, it makes the most sense that he stepped away, obviously, with the tragedy in his family.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, man, that was kind of rough. So I was like, that was definitely a world shatterer. So him stepping down makes sense.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah, I the stuff where it says, oh, he was forced out, you know, to me, it's probably those people who don't like Joss Whedon, who thought that Whedon's parts of the movie is what ruined Justice League, although I, you know, tend to doubt that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of anti-Whedon people, unfortunately. The guy, as great as this with some of the stuff he's done, the guy takes a lot of hell for things that he's done or things that he's had actors say. And it's unfortunate because he's quit projects, things, or had to leave projects just because fans are just assholes and can't just be happy watching a movie. They have to complain about every little thing that they didn't think was right.
Yeah.
You know, just, if you want to be a critic, you want to criticize the movie, that's fine. Leave the guy alone. Don't go attacking the director via Twitter or Instagram or whatever because you feel like you know better than he does. Guess what? You don't. Otherwise, you'd be the one making the money. He'd be the one watching your movie. But you're not, so shut your face. You know, it's just, it's like, look, I'll talk bad about a lot of movies. I have never sat down and gone to Zack Snyder's Twitter and said, you suck, because he doesn't care. He doesn't know who I am. He's not going to give a damn. You know, why would I waste my time?
Yeah, he's not checking for you. So
after week, because they know he does read that stuff and it does get to him. And that's the unfortunate part. Some of those people just do it because they know it gets to him.
Yeah.
some of them legitimately get mad because, you know, he had the Black Widow sterilized in Civil War or Age of Ultron and called herself a monster. Now he's the biggest, you know, not feminist, obviously, sexist, you know, in the history of movies. Well, here's something to think about. If it was really that bad, do you think Scarlett Johansson would have gone along with it?
Right.
Like, really?
You know?
I'm pretty sure she would have had enough time to be able to say, you know what? I don't think this is appropriate.
So let's figure something out. And they would have figured something else out, but it works as a storyline. It works as a plot point. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
You know, he wrote it so that she says, I'm a monster, because that's what she believes that she is. He's not saying, you're a monster because you can't have kids. He's saying she thinks she's a monster. That's what it is. That's what it comes down to. And I would bet if you asked a lot of women who weren't able to have kids in that situation, they would probably tell you something very similar, that they at some point in their lives have felt like a monster because they can't do that. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm making that up and shouldn't have said it. But I'm sure there's a feeling somewhere along those lines, people who at some point in their lives, when they find out they can't have kids, that type of depression sets in and something like that will come across your mind. And that's essentially what I think was being said there. But that aside, that's a whole other thing. That's a whole different story.
Yeah. Back to we'll get back to Crisis on Earth X. I feel like
I don't even know how we
digress so hard.
I really don't know. Like, we just took a left somewhere and I totally, the GPS couldn't get me back. So I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know where I went.
Routing.
Yeah, right? You're not listening. Shut up and turn
back.
So it's unfortunate. So to finish my thought there, shut up and leave these directors alone.
Right.
Right on your own pages that you don't like the movie. Leave them alone. Anyway, now, back to why we liked Crisis on Infinite.
Let's do like general first. Let's just say something general. Like, basically, all right, so right off the bat, I'm going to tell you, I love Crisis on Earth X. Everybody needs to watch this. Even if you don't watch the show, if you went to go see Justice League and you were dissatisfied with Justice League, watch Crisis on Earth X. Watch it. I think if you're fans of the series, you'll really get some of the nods that they do. But even if you're not, I think it does a good enough job of setting these characters up within this contained event where it tells a story that you can really get involved in. And you can really, like, there's moments, man. There are moments where you feel invested in these characters. That is the one thing I felt that Justice League did not have. They did not get us invested with the characters. Right. Crisis on Earth X, it had like, yo, look, I'll tell you, I was bawling my eyes out. Oh, man. But what about you? What you think, Professor?
I think they gave us an almost 2-hour movie that's better than anything they've done as far as the DCEU has been so far. You know, I mean, it was four shows, 45 minutes each, basically all the commercials. So they basically gave us a 2-hour movie, maybe 2.5 hour. I'm not good at math. That is what we come to expect from the cinematic universe. You know, I think if you take that same story that we watched and you turn it into an actual movie with those same actors, give them the effects, give them the budget that you used for Justice League, that thing would have been amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Would have been intense, you know, and it was just written so well and it flowed so well over the four shows. And again, it comes back to somebody watching over all four shows who knows how to steer the ship. You know, because you made sure that each episode was more or less dedicated to the characters from that episode. And you kept some of the other shows out, some of the characters from the other shows out, so as not to crowd the shows too much. And it worked really, really well. You know, like, you didn't have, so for the first one was Supergirl. You didn't have Ray Palmer. You didn't have, I don't think Firestorm was in that episode.
Like, you didn't have most of the legends. Most of the legends weren't there.
I think the only two legends were
Sarah,
Rory, and Sarah.
And Martin. No, Martin was there.
Martin was there. You're right. I think maybe Jax might have been there too.
Yeah.
You had like half of the legends. Anybody who had been on one of the other shows showed up.
Yeah.
And then when it switched to Arrow, like, you didn't have most of the Arrow cast. You had Felicity, that was pretty much it. I don't think you had anybody else that I remember from Arrow who showed up on the Supergirl episode. But at the same time, the main premise of the Supergirl episode is Barry Allen's wedding. And for it being her show, it fits really well, because the beginning of the show focus is a little bit on the wedding. You know, it's a quick clip of Oliver and Felicity talking while Oliver's the Green Arrow, you know, about, and this is the very beginning, so it's not really a spoiler, so relax if you
oh my God, oh no.
Literally within the first 5 minutes of the show. You know, Oliver is dressed as the Green Arrow and he's beating up on somebody, and Felicity's talking to him, hey, we have something to discuss, so we go into Barry's wedding, you know, of course we're going, blah blah blah. And then it clips to, I think the next bit is a little bit of the Legends talking about the wedding.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So everybody was like accepting their invitations.
Yeah, it might be the one part episode where we see more of the Legends. I don't remember exactly, but I think it might have only been those four. And then it goes to Supergirl, who's in her apartment, and she's all bummed from the previous episode where she found out that, you know, I don't know if it's technically a spoiler.
That's a spoiler. We won't take that from the people. She
finds out something that makes her unhappy. She and her sister are kibitzing over something that made her sister unhappy. And they decide, you know what, we're going to turn those frowns upside down, so to speak, and we're going to go to the wedding. They weren't going to go, now they're going to go. But at that point, the focus kind of goes back to her, because the scene there is a little bit longer with the two of them talking things out. And switch to Arrow, and it, you know, the focus goes mainly to the Arrow crew, but everybody else is on the show. And then you switch to the next night to the Flash, and the focus is mainly on the Flash crew with everybody. And it's just kind of how it worked the whole way through.
Yeah, it stayed real balanced. It definitely stayed real balanced.
But the kicker to it is you don't really feel it.
Yeah.
Unless you're kind of watching for that, you're not really going to pick up on it, because you're not going to really notice it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because like I said, the beginning of the Supergirl episode is, I think there's a quick bit with the Flash and Oliver and Felicity, and then there's the Legends. So they're introducing everybody, and if you watch the episode, it really doesn't feel like a Supergirl episode. It feels like a Justice League episode.
Yeah.
But it's Supergirl, and the main focus of the show, when all comes out, is her. But she's not in your face the entire episode. It really is all about the crossover. And that kind of continues. It's almost like they're telling the story from the focus of the show, but they're making sure everybody else is still included as part of it. But it really flows really well, and it really works really well. And it was very much enjoyed it. It had its moments of things I didn't like, which we'll get into in a little bit.
Yeah.
But overall, it was excellent. If they put it out as just like a feature, like they cut everything together, cut all the commercials out, and put it out on like a 2-hour Blu-ray,
right,
and make it into a movie, I would buy it and watch it over and over, because it was really, really good.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely solid. All right, so now is the time where we give you the warning, the disclaimer. We're about to step into spoiler territory. We wanted to really pick this show apart and talk about the things that we liked, talk about the things that we didn't like. So we're going to get into detail. So if you haven't watched the event, stop the podcast now. Go watch Crisis on Earth X. Then come back.
Yep.
Listen to us. So let's dive in. I give you the countdown. 3, 2, 1. If you're still here, I don't know what to do for you. I don't.
If you're still here, it's on you. It ain't on us.
So let's dive in. Like, so my biggest thing, like, I love the Supergirl episode, because it definitely gets us into the bigger plot that's going on, but we still have that focus on Kara, but it's not overwhelming. You know what I'm saying? Right. So like we were talking about earlier, like both Kara and what's her sister's name again? Alex. Yeah. So Kara and Alex are sitting in Kara's house, and basically they're both going through their own like emotional romantic events. Like Alex just stepped away from her girl who she was supposed to be actually married. She was engaged to. They were talking about marriage, trying to get things together, but it just wasn't going to work for them, because basically it was Alex wants to have kids, her girl doesn't. So that's a big thing. I think that's something, honestly, I feel like that's something that you should talk about. Like, you should have already talked about before you propose. But that's just me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big one right there. Yeah.
So that's a big, so she took that romantic hit and she's dealing with that. Kara is dealing with the whole, her whole thing with Mon-El. So we basically spent the entire last season watching this budding romance between Kara and Mon-El. It was great. It was beautiful. And it finally came to fruition and Mon-El's parents came and messed everything up. So Kara had to fight them and send them away, but by basically creating a layer in the atmosphere that was laced with lead. And so Mon-El is a Daxamite. Other Daxamites cannot live on Earth while it's like that. So Mon-El had to leave. Well, when we left Mon-El, he entered some kind of wormhole. So he comes back this season. And he's from the future. And he's not just from the future. He's got a wife. He's been in the future for 7 years. 7 years and he's got a wife. And so Carl's excited to see him. And now she can't even be with him because he's married already. So, like, needless to say, Kara and Alex are very depressed. And it's just like, this sucks. So it's like, what are we going to do? We're going to sit here and mope? No, we're going to go somewhere. We're going to go to another Earth and we're going to turn up. That's what we're going to do.
And boy, does she.
Oh, man. Yo, Alex had so much fun on this trip. I don't even think she was ready for the fun that she had on this trip.
But we'll
get into that. So basically they get in there and we get to see more snippets of, you know, Ollie and Barry talking and, you know, Kara and the girls are all talking. It's just like we get to see everybody kind of like preparing for this wedding, you know, getting ready, you know. I think the biggest moment for me was Alex and Sarah hooking up, though, because like. That just, like, you knew it was going to happen. You knew it was going to happen, especially since they had that little rehearsal dinner. And it was like, oh, this was going to happen. She needed that one night just to kind of, like, let's blow some steam, you know. And Sarah's, like, interdimensional lover, so she doesn't even care.
Well, I think it's kind of obvious when the two of them start throwing back bottles of booze together.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because at one point it's Kara and Barry, and they're in the, you know, the top floor of Jitters, I think it is.
Right.
And Barry's asking a favor, and at one point two of them look over the edge, and there's Alex and Sarah arm in arm draining shots, you know, like a weird scene out of The Lady and the Tramp. So you kind of knew where things were going.
The setup was real.
And the tag on that whole scene is pretty hilarious, because so the next thing you see in that scene is Ollie is getting all kind of fluttered, you know, nervous in his gut, and he Oliver decides he's going to ask my man's girl, boss's girl,
oh Lord,
marry him. He asks Felicity to get married, and my man's girl said no.
She said, no, I don't want to marry you. I said, oh, just the disrespect. I said, yo, she has been trying my nerves for the past couple seasons. I mean, we've been talking about this. In the middle of
he can't even talk about it. He's just so done.
Because you got to understand, like, this is not the first time that something like this has happened. Like, we saw her in Arrow that one season. She had got shot. You know what I'm saying? Ollie didn't tell her that he had a kid because he promised his baby's mom he was going to tell nobody that he had a kid. So she finds out that he has a kid and she's mad at him because he lied to her and he didn't tell her. But he was trying to respect the wishes of the baby mom. That's not, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he ain't raised the boy. That's not his child to be just like throwing out, divulging information all willy-nilly. You know what I'm saying? So she mad and she ready to go. So Curtis builds her a little microchip to put in her back so that she can walk again. And the first thing that this woman does when she gets up out of the seat is walk out on my man. Like, the disrespect that you have to have in your soul.
Those boots were made for walking. As soon as she could feel her legs again, she just tipped out the door.
She bounced. Said,
I'm out. So yeah, it's not the first time that poor Oliver has been left hanging in the dirt with this girl. It's a cringy scene because he's all soft and talking to her and saying, I just want to get married. And she's saying, I don't want to marry you. And he says, well, I just don't see the, I don't want to marry you.
And everybody eyes on Ollie.
Everybody hears it. He kind of goes, okay. And he takes a step back from her and she walks out. And we tell you that part of the story because the tag on the scene is as she walks out of Jitters and goes down the street one way, the camera pans back, and there's Alex and Sarah just straight making out right in the building.
So somebody
up against the side of the building, like you know, checking each other's teeth, more or less. They were in it to win it at that point. So you knew. Once we saw that, you had to know what the next scene was going to be.
Yeah.
Like, you knew where this was all going. And it was, you know, that almost that walk of shame moment. The next morning, Alex trying to get out of bed. She falls over and, like, hits her head on something. It's pretty funny. It was pretty well.
She was struggling. Yeah, that was a good scene. That even leading up to the coming up to the wedding chapel. Yeah.
She's got the big ass sunglasses on because she's all over. And she's trying to avoid telling Kara what happened. And she's kind of dancing around it. Here comes Sarah, and Alex starts to freak out a little bit. Sarah doesn't say anything. She just kind of walks by. And then Sarah comes back into frame and says something like,
it's like, you okay?
I heard you fall out of bed this morning. I just want to make sure you were all right.
Whoop.
And you see the look on Kara's face. Look, Melissa Benoist is a beautiful woman. And she had that perfect face for that moment that, like, ooh.
She, like, really has a lot of moments like that on the show, which makes her just golden, yo.
It was very funny. She had that look like, I know what you did. And Sarah goes inside, and Alex turns around fairly mortified. And she and her sister have a very brief, awkward moment that was very funny. So,
they
did all that stuff really well as far as the humor stuff goes in the show. And just those couple of beats leading up to it were really, really good.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the church scene hits. I don't remember if the church scene, I think the church scene might have been in The Flash, or was it still in Supergirl? I don't remember.
I think it might have still been in Supergirl, because that's when we get introduced to the Earth X doppelgangers.
That's when the stuff goes bananas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, like, you know, we had questions about that scene because it was just like, yo, like, all of these people are here, and I don't know how many of them know you or not, but it was like they started breaking out using their powers and everything. It was just crazy in that one moment. But hold on, before we even get to that, there's a moment, there's an A.
Oh, yeah,
that I honestly feel like I figured it out. So it might be real, and I think you confirmed it for me, Andrew. That's what it was supposed to be. So basically, Barry gets approached by this young girl. She comes up and she talks to Barry, and she's basically, I mean, for all intents and purposes, she's fangirling, like,
completely.
Yeah, she's fangirling on Barry. Like, it's like you wonder if she's, like, attracted to him, but it's like you could see there's, like, an innocence to it. And she's just like, oh man, wow. It's like, it's just great to see you guys, and da-da-da-da. It's like, I'm just glad to be here. Like, this is awesome type of thing. So it's like, the question was, who is this girl? Like, they don't just show you somebody like that in a moment like that without them having some purpose. So the conclusion I drew from that episode was that's Barry and Iris's daughter from the future. So take that how you will, folks.
If you watch her and you watch her body language and listen to what she's saying, it's very clear that she knows something that she's not supposed to know.
Right.
There's a look in her eye like, I can't believe I'm standing in front of this guy. Like, you know what I mean? There's an acknowledgement in her expression and in her body language and in how nervous she sounds when she's talking to him and all that stuff. Like, you know, I almost felt like she was going to say, so go get him, Flash, or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Because isn't that like the last thing she says to him is "Don't forget to say I do" or something like that?
Right. Yeah. Something
like she knows what's coming, kind of thing. So, you know, and then you pointed it out to me, and then I went and read later. It's another article that kind of said the same thing. So I really do kind of think you're probably right on the nose with that. I think that's going to be his daughter. The article said there's supposed to be a son. They're supposed to be twins. But I don't know if they'll investigate that angle or if they're even going to bother to try to add it. I don't know.
Yeah. Because, you know, they have like a big problem with having multiple speedsters on the show. So they did it for this event. Because they wanted to go all out. But I think that was the biggest reason why they moved Wally out for a little bit. Only because they have a difficult time having multiple speedsters. Like, the effects are costly.
Well, the effects are costly, and it kind of gets a little redundant.
Right.
Like, comic book is one thing. You know what I mean? But when you start adding 2, 3, 4 people plus a bad guy who all have the exact same powers, it kind of gets a little...
congested.
Yeah, I think it's a little boring week to week to watch the same shit. So, I don't have a problem with him kind of taking some of his characters out. Like you were saying, I think on the one we talked about yesterday, that it's more than likely that Wally may actually end up moving over to the Titans show.
Yeah, like it looks like it. I mean, if DC is preparing to move the Titans show to their streaming service, I feel like, I mean, we all know Kid Flash was a member of Teen Titans, so it just would make sense. If they're setting him up to go over to that show and they could actually use a speedster, you know what I'm saying? They've already been releasing the casting for that show, and they've cast everybody except for Kid Flash yet. So it just makes sense if Wally goes over there.
Yeah, I think that would fit. And I think it would make sense to do it that way. It would be kind of silly to, you know, cast somebody else when you've already got the actor cast. Why not just leave them in there?
Yeah. Other big things of note. There wasn't a Barry doppelganger in Earth X. We got introduced to the Earth X crew at the wedding. They crashed the wedding, and so we get to see Oliver's doppelganger, who is actually the Fuhrer. So let's preface this with Earth X. Earth X is basically an alternate universe where the Nazis won the war and they take over the world.
Right.
And so they come to this world because basically their Supergirl, what do they call her? Like Ultra Girl?
They call her Ultra Girl or Ultra Woman, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. A nod to Infinite Crisis on Infinite Earths, I mean.
Right.
So basically what they're doing is they coming over to Earth One so that they can take Kara, cut her open, take her heart, put it in evil Kara so that she can live. Because basically what's happening to her is something along the same lines of All-Star Superman, where she's taken in too much of the solar radiation and her cells are like in an unstable state. And so she's set to explode at some point.
Right.
So if they get Kara's heart, then evil Supergirl can live and, you know, she'll be able to metabolize that sunlight the way that she needs to. Right. So, you know, they all come. The Oliver's there. Oliver's doppelganger is there. He's the Fuhrer, basically the leader of the whole Nazi regime in Earth X. And he's married to Ultra Girl. So that's his motivation for being here. They do have a speedster, but the speedster is Eobard Thawne. And like you were saying before, they didn't make it clear whether or not Thawne was from Earth X. They made it sound like he was their Thawne. He was Earth One's Thawne.
That's really what it did feel like, yeah, like from a different time.
Yeah. So that's interesting. I feel like that's the guy, like he's like a roach. Like you can't kill him.
Well, because I think it was the episode of Flash, he knows everything about Star Labs. Like, he knows it inside and out.
Right.
You know, at one point, he's trying to find... At one point, the only people who aren't captured in some way, shape, or form are Felicity and Iris.
Right.
They're hiding in Star Labs, and they're hiding in the room that used to hold Gideon. And Felicity's able to crack through the security in Star Labs and shut all the power down so that they can't hurt Supergirl. And, you know, that they start to try, you know, we've searched the entire place. We don't know where they are. And the Thawne character, played again by guy who plays Wells.
Oh, what is it? Tom something?
I forget. But anyway, it's basically the Harrison Wells version of Eobard Thawne. It's not actually Thawne. Although
Tom,
I think
Cavanaugh.
Tom Cavanaugh. Thank you.
There you go.
I think he even makes mention at one point, like, you know, I took this face because I knew you'd appreciate it or something like that.
Yeah.
But he, all of a sudden, his head perks up and he goes racing down the hallway to the room where Gideon is. If he's from a completely different Earth, he wouldn't necessarily know that that room is there.
Right.
So I think it's supposed to be the regular Thawne who just somehow gets that same face again. And he seems to know Barry. You know, when the encounters go down, he says, because even at the very end when we last see them, Barry's got him trapped and he's doing the whole shivering hand thing like he's going to put through his heart. And, and you know, Thawne says, you're not going to kill me. I know that's not your way. And in one of the moves that bothers me because I don't understand it, he lets him go. Just lets Thawne go. He doesn't knock him out, doesn't take him back to Star Labs, put him in chamber. He just lets him go.
Man, I would have gave him that whole speed palm.
Right? You know, E. Honda. Exactly. He'll put my man on his back, but he lets him go. And I'm hoping that comes back at some point this season.
Yeah.
Because otherwise that whole bit isn't going to make any sense as to why they would do that.
Yeah, they got to wrap that one up. Like, maybe that'll have something to do with the arc involving his daughter or something.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Could be. But, so there was no evil Barry, which I thought was interesting. You know, they didn't do evil characters of most of the other people either. They did a couple of handful of characters here. They did an evil Detective Lance. They brought Tommy back, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a hurt piece.
That
man was
a heart wrenching scene. That was brutal.
Woo! I was not expecting that. They catch you off guard because he's wearing the same garb that quote unquote Adrian Chase wore.
Oh, you're right, Chase. It was Chase. You're right.
And the last season of Arrow. And so, you know, you're expecting him to take this off, and we're expecting to see the guy who, you know, assumed the identity of Adrian Chase.
I'll be honest with you. I thought it was going to be Roy. When they went to take the mask off, I initially thought it was going to be Roy. And then it wasn't. It was Tommy. And I was like, whoa.
Wow. I think it would
have made more sense to put the Merlin costume on him, the Merlin Dark Archer costume on him, to have to be Tommy.
Yeah.
They might have thought that was too much of a giveaway, but most people probably would have thought it was Malcolm Merlin.
Yeah, because I would have thought it was Malcolm Merlin. I really would have thought it was Malcolm Merlin. But then again, I was just like, you know, most of the bad guys that are showing up here are good guys, and the good guys that are showing up in this Earth X are bad guys. True. So I would have thought that, you know, Malcolm Merlin would have been a good guy. So,
right.
But that reveal was incredible to see, like, have him pull off the mask and see Tommy Merlin, like a face we haven't seen since the first season of Arrow.
Right.
Oh, man. It brought all the feels up.
Brutal. And it's a brutal, brutal scene when you watch through it.
Yeah.
Two of them going back and forth. It's pretty mean. But yeah. Like all of the other main characters, Oliver and Kara, both had doppelgangers.
Mm-hmm.
They were both in the show. The only one major character, and not to say that the Legends aren't major characters, but it's that Legends is a team show. It's not really a, you know, as much as you've got Team Arrow and Team Flash on those shows, the shows are about the Arrow and Flash. They're not about the entire team. So right. It's a little different with Legends. But there was no Barry, no Dark Barry, which was interesting. I kept expecting a Dark Barry to show up at some point. Actually, it was... Before I realized that Oliver was the Fuhrer, I was expecting Dark Barry to be the Fuhrer. He was going to be the guy in charge.
Yeah.
So. It was interesting. It was just the way they did that.
Yeah. So we got that, and, you know, we got a couple heart-wrenching moments in that event, man. I mean, the biggest one for me was the loss of Stein. Like, Martin Stein... Like, we knew, we had read articles that said he was trying to leave the show. He was going to be leaving the show after the end of the season. So I'm like waiting for the end of the season for us to be losing Martin. And we lose him in this event.
This event, before the finale, no less.
Before the finale. So it's like you watch this kind of build up, like you watch this build up on Legends between Martin and Jax, and it kind of reaches a fever, like a high point where, you know, like the revelation that they're family, you know what I'm saying? And they look at each other as family. Like Jax looks at Martin like a father, and Martin looks at Jax like a son. This is, I remember, I think that was in the last episode, right? The last episode of Legends right before the event, where Jax is like, you know, I never got to meet my father. Da, 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 da. And it was just like this real tender moment. Like, I was like, dang, you guys really killing me right now.
So just quick little to background on this. What it all stems from is, so we know Stein, or Gray, as he gets called, has a daughter now, and his daughter just gave birth to a baby boy.
Right. Ronnie Jr.
Ronnie, called Robbie. Ronnie. The decision is kind of made that Stein is going to go be with his family. He doesn't want to be Firestorm anymore.
Right.
And initially, Jack says, fine, I'm okay with that. They develop a formula that can separate the two of them, trick the whatever, I forget the
nuclear matrix or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, the matrix. They can trick the matrix into believing that they're still together, but they're really not. They'll both be fine for the rest of their lives. But the consequence is there's no more Firestorm.
Right.
Now, Jax has a problem with this twofold. He doesn't want to stop being a hero, and now he doesn't want to lose the guy who's basically turned into his father. He never knew his father. He never grew up with his father. Now he's had Gray, or Stein, who has basically been his father, been that figure for him for how many years, and now he's going to leave. So Jax is having a real kind of crisis of faith, you know, between the two. He doesn't know. He doesn't want to make the guy stay, but he doesn't want him to go.
Yeah.
So there's a very funny scene where Stein, very brilliant scientist, comes up with a new potion to keep Jax with some powers that basically turns him into Spider-Man, who can only stick to walls. He can't shoot webs. He can't jump. He doesn't have the strength. He can just stick to walls. And Jax gets a little annoyed and he storms off, and Stein's kind of like, I don't understand what's going on. And it basically comes to a head that Jax was doesn't want to lose Stein because it's basically his father, and he feels like he's going to lose his father if Stein leaves.
Yeah.
In the middle of the third episode, I believe, there's a heroic moment where they're trying to destroy some kind of base on Earth X for the Nazi side, and there's this switch that has to be pulled, but the Nazis have them pinned down via weapons, and Stein decides, I'm going to go. Somehow they get separated as Firestorm.
They realize they had to be in two places at once, so they were like, all right. We got to split.
So they do. Jax gets to his, he's pinned down. There's one left. Stein's the only one that can get to it. He goes to make a run for it, and of course he gets shot down. Now he survives. They apparently put like 2 gallons of blood out of his body, and somehow he still survived. That was a little overkill with the amount of blood they had on the floor underneath him.
They said it was his link to Jax that kept him clinging to life.
Right, because then he struggles, and he gets up again, and he manages to hit the switch, but then he gets shot a second time.
Yeah.
They get him back to the Wave Runner. They put him in the chair with the machine's name I just said, now I'm blanking.
Gideon. Yeah.
And Gideon tries to heal him, and she can't. Wounds are too severe. The only thing keeping him alive is his connection to Jax. The problem being is now Jax is starting to die as well, because the connection's not strong enough to keep the two of them alive. So they're both going to die, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And essentially what happens is Stein says to him, I refuse to let you die because you're like my son. And he basically takes the bullet. And Stein passes on, and Jax has a really rough moment, you know, with the unfortunate passing of Stein. Great scene.
It was.
Initially, when I watched it, I felt it was a little over the top with Jax, and the more I thought about it, like, look, it's not no real secret that my father and I don't really speak, so I don't have that same kind of connection that you would have with a father. But the more I think about it, when I see the scene, and you go, I really did just lose his father. You totally understand how he
went. Yeah.
So it's an amazing scene, and it's a good scene. And I had said, as we're watching the first episode, the boss and I are kind of, you know, texting back and forth, and I said, they really need to kill somebody to make this whole thing mean something. That's kind of where it comes from. You need to, having no idea myself that the gentleman who played Stein, who's the actor's name I don't remember at the moment, was leaving the show already. And then sure enough, the end of this episode, they go ahead and they do that. And it really does add that emotional moment to the show where you're like, okay, this is for real. Something for real happened here. Yeah.
There are real stakes. And like, that's really what it boils down to. There has to be stakes when you're telling a story this massive.
Right.
And it was just necessary. We didn't know who it was going to be. I thought I had a good idea because I had already read that article that said that Victor Garber was trying to leave Legend. So it just made sense. But I mean, even though it made sense, like that whole scene just had me bawling. Like, oh, man, when he was like, but I see you as like my son. I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. It's coming. The tears are coming down. Oh, man.
It's dusty in here. What's going on?
It's like, turn the air purifier on.
That's right. That breeze. Where's that breeze coming from? It's coming right in my eyes. What's going on?
Oh, man.
How's that window?
And that's the thing. I was, like, worried that that scene was going to be a little bit over the top with Jax bawling the way that he was. But I was like, dang, like, I'm in this scene right now. I feel this. There was definitely a lot of weight. There was definitely a lot of weight. And then, like, it carried through to the end of the event. And it was just, like, you can tell, like, one, they weren't really talking about Martin in a way that it was like, oh, he's dying. They were actually saying goodbye to Victor.
Yeah.
Because he was leaving the cast. It was like, it was powerful, man. So
it was powerful.
Yeah.
So it was the moment after where they're all kind of sitting around and Brandon Routh is staring at a picture of him and Stein from one of their previous, you know, adventures, you know, from back in the past.
Yeah.
And you know, he's very clearly got tears in his eyes. It's, you know, it's a very strong, it's a really well done, you know, you a lot of shows don't give you that kind of send off, that kind of emotional send off that you kind of need, you know, in certain characters deserve. And they really gave it to Stein in this one. It turned out really, really well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, man. Oh. And then, so basically it rounds out with, you know, the hero. Well, so the heroes, you know, save the day and all of that stuff and everything goes down. Like, it was really, it built up to this big, like, epic scene. Like, before we even got to the funeral and all of that stuff, this epic scene of, like, almost all the cast members, like, lined up together doing the slow motion walk, ready to take the day. And it was just like, that's how many people are in this show right now. It's like, whoa. And I was like, they told a story with this massive cast and Justice League couldn't do it with like six.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's just,
I was like, I felt like sitting through Justice League, I was like, yo, this feels like too much. There's too much going on. I don't know these people. Like, how am I supposed to get involved? And then I watch Crisis on Earth X and I'm like, whoa.
That's how you do it.
I am involved with each and every last one of these people. They mean something to me. Like, that's crazy. For you to tell a story with, like, I don't know how many, but it was like 20 plus people in that shot. Oh.
A lot of people. Because we tried through the numbers last night. I know I don't remember everybody, but it was a lot of people.
Yeah, it was a lot. And so it was like, it was cool to see them tell the story and not have it feel, it didn't feel congested at all at any point. And it filled up with everybody in the cast at the right moment. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Because at that point, we knew all the characters. Everybody got enough screen time. Now we just ate. Onslaught, final battle. So I was definitely with it. So, you know, and then going back to the funeral, so it's like, our question is now, what happens to Jax? You know what I'm saying? He can't be Firestorm anymore. And we don't really know where that's gonna take his character. Is there gonna be a moment in time where that serum wears off, the Matrix becomes unstable, and then he starts feeling like how Stein did in that episode of Flash when they needed to find Jax? So my theory is that the baby, Robbie, is going to be the other half of, is it Ronnie? Is Ronnie?
I think it's Ronnie.
Ronnie? It's Ronnie. Yeah.
Because Robbie's the name of the actor, isn't it?
Robbie Amell is the name of the actor. Yeah, that did the first Firestorm. That's right. Yeah.
That's what it is. Okay.
Yeah. So Ronnie, the baby, could be the potentially be the other half of the new Firestorm. And they could pull him, since Legends, they time travel, they can pull Ronnie, baby Ronnie from the future, where he's full grown, and he can be the other half of Firestorm.
Right. Which I thought is a fascinating idea.
Yeah.
I think you're on definitely onto something for sure there.
Yeah, that'll definitely be interesting if they do that, if they go that route, man. But basically the whole and I like how the whole story ends. Like I was upset though of how they did my man Diggle. Like Diggle wasn't even in there, which is a question for me because He's been donning the hood. He's been Green Arrow for these past couple of episodes. Yeah. And so we started this event with Oliver Queen being the Green Arrow when I had originally thought that he gave that up. He gave it up.
He did.
So to see him in the hood the
last couple episodes.
Yeah. So to see him in the hood with no explanation, like I have questions. Like, what's up? You're gonna have to fill me in. And then like So Diggle wasn't in there the whole time, and then they bring him in at the last minute. I think, did they do that the last time too? Rushed him in there, like they rushed Flash rushed him in there, and he lost his lunch again.
Oh, that's happened a couple times where Flash runs him and he throws up all over the place. It's very funny every time it happens.
Always.
Because he always freaks out anytime Barry comes by. He always freaks out.
Like, he watches Damian Dark, like, lift people and throw them with magic. And he can't handle that Barry runs really fast.
I mean, that is, I guess we can talk a little about that. It's some of the stuff that I wasn't as big a fan of.
Right.
Not as big a fan of the church scene because they suddenly start showing their powers. You know what I mean? There's clearly people in the audience, so to speak, that don't know who they really are.
Right.
Who now, you know, machine guns start going off and Barry runs around, catches all these bullets, and he stops and drops them all on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, well, the police chief is there, who's known Barry for years. If he looks and he watches him do this, he's going to know, hey, wait a minute, something's up with that, because he just dropped a whole hail of bullets in front of him. The other part of that is all of a sudden, Ollie goes sliding down one side of the church and pops up with his bow. Why would he have his bow hidden in the church? Like, why would he do that? That doesn't make any sense.
That's a Batman move, if I've ever seen one.
You realize Kara is on a different Earth, so protecting her identity doesn't care as much. But still, suddenly you've got this pretty blonde girl in a dress flying around, shooting lasers from her eyes and punching people. It's a very strange, you know, very strange kind of things at that point where they...
Yeah, the logistics were falling apart there. But we kind of, like, because it was the heat of the moment, we let it pass. We let it pass because it's like, it was hectic. Like, there was a lot going on. So it's like, we just assumed people just ran out of there with their heads down, didn't see nothing. Because I'd have been out of there. I need you to understand, like, if anything goes down and you see me moving, just move with me. Just move. Don't ask questions. Just roll.
The bow part of it bothered me the most because he literally pulls a bow out of thin air.
It's magic.
Like, it's ready to go. And you're like, wait a minute.
He must have learned that from Constantine.
Maybe. Maybe that's what it was. For real, man, like, come on. Like, let's, come on.
Come on, son.
Come on, son. Exactly. So, you know, that kind of bugged me. It did kind of bug me that there's no Superman. You know, you got this hero who could clearly show up to save the day, who wouldn't have been a terrible addition to the story, and he doesn't show up.
Yeah.
Although it does set up a cool scene where, you know, Kara says to her doppelganger, my cousins are going to save me. And then a few minutes later, she's saved by Ray Palmer, of course, played by Brandon Routh, who, of course, played Superman at one point in his career. So there is that kind of little Easter egg that I'm a fan of. Yeah. But, you know, some of the stuff like that kind of bugged me a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold you. I'm actually glad Superman wasn't in it. Namely because he's too much of a heavy hitter. Like, I needed a level of difficulty for this plot to carry through. Like, I wanted them to have a difficult time. And it makes sense that Superman wasn't there because Barry only gave that device to Kara to use to float between worlds. So nobody else, I think, really travels in between worlds. So unless Clark is actually with her, there's no reason for him to be there.
But then why have her say it? Outside of having it available as the Easter egg, why have her say, my cousin's going to save me?
Oh, well, then that was a useless line. That was basically, yeah. I mean, that was a line used only for the sole purpose of the Easter egg of Brandon Routh. That's right. What that was
for.
It
has to have been. It's the only thing I can think of. Which, you know, I'm okay with that, I guess, because it is cool when you think about it. But at the same time, it's like,
yeah, logic dictates probably that was unnecessary.
I can't think of what else it was that I wasn't a big fan of, because for the most part, I really enjoyed it.
We didn't talk about Red Tornado. Red Tornado popped up there.
Yeah, it was a little weird.
What about Citizen Cold? I liked Citizen Cold being there. I like the intro of the new hero, the Ray. He's cool.
Played by a guy who used to be on Doctor Who for a little bit.
He did a lot of stuff on BBC. He did like the BBC version of Being Human. He was on Doctor Who. I saw him on Quantico last season.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Okay. He was an MI6 agent. Yeah, he's been popping up all over the place. So just to go along the lines of that. So this guy got introduced. His character's hero name is called the Ray. His actual name is Ray. So it's kind of weird. His superhero name is the Ray, and his, you know, alter ego is Ray something. But he's from Earth One, and he goes for some reason or another, he gets transported to Earth X, and basically he's trying to help, you know, bring down the Nazi regime and, you know, restore the world to what it could be. But basically, this is all setting up for a DC CWC miniseries called Freedom Fighters, The Ray. And basically, it follows this guy as he's like trying to free prisoners in Earth X. So we'll get to see. And that's the thing. We didn't get to see the Barry doppelganger, but Barry's doppelganger will be in this miniseries. So it's like you got that, you still got Arrow. I think it's like a prequel. I think it's a prequel building up to Earth X because I believe Kara's character is still in there, which is weird because, you know,
she's done dead. Blown up. Yeah.
She done blown up good.
She did.
So that'll be interesting to see. And now I'm more interested to see it now than I was before, because I kind of was just like, oh, okay, well, it's like Vixen, so I'm going to check it out. I've been watching Vixen for the past couple of seasons. And if you haven't been watching the Vixen miniseries, yo, check that out, especially if you're a fan of Legends right now, because they're introducing a character who was introduced on Vixen Season 2. So you get all that history. You know exactly who she is when she shows up.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so check it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah, but I mean, overall, man, Crisis on Earth X was brilliant, man.
It really was. I mean, it was just so well done.
Yeah, man. And just for a TV endeavor. Like, this was TV. Could you imagine if they had a blockbuster movie budget to do this? Sheesh.
It would have been the best thing they put on the big screen, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
No doubt.
So. Yeah, man.
Interesting little tag here I just read for our story earlier about Disney and Fox. Now, I know we kind of cleared all that already, but there's a article I was kind of perusing some stuff as we were talking on Cinema Blend from about a few hours ago that says, looks like, so Bryan Singer was fired as the director of the Freddie Mercury biopic.
Yeah, because that was, I don't know what was going on that set, but him and Malik were fighting, like, it was crazy.
Well, and we've heard similar things about singer before, so not entirely surprised that he's having trouble. But what this article is saying is it appears that Fox is going a step further and terminating the relationship with Singer entirely.
Oh.
Now, Singer's the one behind all the X-Men movies.
Oh, yeah.
So, here's where I'm going with this.
Oh, man.
If you're getting ready to sell your company to, oh, I don't know, Disney, you probably want to cut ties with someone who's being accused of very, very bad things. So it would be interesting, including somebody who just happens to have ties to, oh, I don't know, the X-Men franchise that you're trying to bring home. This kind of seems like it could be showing us their hand here. You know, I mean, if all of a sudden they're decided, look, they fired him from the Freddie Mercury project. Okay. Why would they now all of a sudden decide they're going to go ahead and just cut his entire production company out from Fox in general?
Yeah.
Top to bottom. This to me screams, we have a deal.
Yep.
But we want this, this, and this to happen first.
Yep.
So, you know, look, what do I know? I'm just a guy sitting here, you know, talking through a computer to a good friend. But, you know, I tend to see between the lines here and some things. And, you know, rather than look like the bad guy to cut him out of their franchise, they can go, hey, you know, you're not going to be a part of this anymore anyway. Why don't you guys go ahead and look like the bad guys and just cut him loose and give us what we want, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, so that old Bad Hat Harry production company is no longer a part of Fox.
Sheesh.
So you got to think that's a sign that's going to show this is probably going to happen. Sheesh. That's what I'm getting at.
I like that. I like that.
I like that a lot. No offense, yes. Bryan Singer, even though I don't like most of your movies.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, from what it sounds like, his behavior on set warranted everything that he's getting right now. Like, come on, man, be professional. Like, he was not showing up to shootings. Like, that was it's horrible.
Well, but didn't he have something a couple years ago that he was touching younger actors?
Yeah, or? Yeah. He had allegations of touching younger actors as well. Like, this guy just an all around like dickhead. Like, there's no way around it. Like,
but that's why I'm getting a strong feeling off of this, because those allegations came out 2, 3, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Was still part of their company.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you're gonna decide to get rid of him over a Freddie Mercury biopic?
Nah, they wanted to get rid of that boy.
I love Freddie Mercury. I love the Queen when the man was still alive.
Yeah.
Got arguably the greatest male singer voice of all time. So a biopic about him is going to do well. It's going to be, movie I'm going to want to see just because I like the man.
Yeah. And have you seen the shots of Rami Malek? God,
it's scary how much he looks like.
Yeah.
But to do this all of a sudden now kind of screams like we're clearing house before we're cleaning out the apartment before we sell it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Do it.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
That's all I got.
My last note for tonight basically is going to be, so, you know, I've been talking to you guys about MoviePass for like the past couple of days. Oh, I'm going to try it out. See how it works. I was talking to you, Professor, and, you know, I was going to let you know how it went. So I tried it last night. Went to go see Roman J. Israel, which, by the way, is an incredible film. Like, surprisingly, like, sleeper hit, like under the radar. Roman J. Israel is definitely, I think, when we do our top three or top five this year, I definitely think Roman J. Israel is going on there. Like, right. Yeah, it was really good. But I went in there, I used MoviePass to pay for the ticket, just checked in, swiped my card, boom, there it was. I got my ticket, no problems. And this is $10 a month, man. This is awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, man. So,
here's my question, though. I mean, I have to ask this.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to use MoviePass in February?
No. Well, yes. No, yes. So, let me tell you how I'm going to do it. So here's what's going to happen. The first set of tickets, they're all going to be pre-ordered.
Okay.
So, they're like, the first ones that I see, they're probably going to be in AMC Prime. They're probably going to be some 3D ones and scattered in there. Might be an IMAX showing. Those I have to get ahead of time because I can't get those through MoviePass. But then for the rest of the month of February, I will be watching one showing of Black Panther every day. And these are legit ticket sales. So they will get a count of a ticket. So I'm basically going to be giving them a ticket a day for the entire length of the film being out in theaters. That's what's going to happen.
Get this man a movie pass.
I'm saying. Look, we are about to break records with Black Panther. And I'm contributing at least 30.
Let's all be honest. It's no coincidence that Black Panther is coming out during Black History Month.
Oh, that's yeah.
That's not a coincidence.
No, that's not a coincidence. Because this is going to be Black History. I need y'all to understand this. Woo!
I can't. Clearly, I'm not saying what, but I can't wait. I can't wait. It just looks
good. It looks so good, man. Oh, that just made me feel great. That just made me feel great right there. Well, that's it for us here at the Boss's Desk. If you're tuning into us for the first time, don't forget to follow us on all the various social media outlets. We're on Facebook under the Boss's Desk, on Twitter at the Boss's Desk, and YouTube, the Boss's Desk as well. We're also on iTunes and Google Play. You can subscribe to our podcast and get regular updates on everything that we're doing here. And if you have any questions about anything you heard in the show, any news items that you want us to talk about or go over, or something you heard in the show that you want to reference and you want us to pick it apart, just send us questions. You can send us questions on Twitter. Just tweet at the Boss's Desk, or you can send us an email at questions@thebossesdesk.com. And you might hear us talk about your question on air, and we'll give you a little shout out and discuss your question. So, yeah. That's it for us here at the Boss's Desk, and we'll catch you next week, guys. We're out.